Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first in our LIBOR podcast series. My name is Christopher Papathanassi. I am the Global Solution Lead for the lending line of business here at Finastra. I'm here with Robert Downs. Robert, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, my name is Rob Downs. I'm Senior Principal Product Manager for lending at Finastra.
So today's topic is readiness, preparing yourself for life after LIBOR. So I think in order to do that, we should just provide a little bit of a summary as to where we are. In a nutshell, at the end of 2021, LIBOR is going to go away in favor of risk-free rates, which are much more representative of actual market data. Now, of the guidelines that have been set as far as the behavior of risk-free rates, discussions that we've been having certainly have led us to believe that the most favored approach is going to be compounded in arrears. And I think that's going to present a number of challenges for the industry going forward, particularly as far as how to handle these rates from an operational standpoint is concerned. So the first question on my mind is, how are we actually going to be dealing with this from a system point of view? Rob, what are your observations?
So let's just get back to the first point you mentioned there. So, you know, obviously, at the moment, the FCA, the Bank of England are, for want of a word, artificially supporting LIBOR. They have been for a while. Today, the FCA mandates that something like 16 banks contribute their opinions of LIBOR. And I think, yes, you know, everyone reads the news, everyone knows about the historic manipulation issues of LIBOR, but I think it's very clear from an industry perspective, you know, people like Andrew Bailey and the FCA are very clear that this is not driven by historical issues with the use of LIBOR. It's really, I think, if you look across the board at how regulation's gone for the last few years, that there's been a trend towards transparency, towards making sure that rates and information that's used is representative of the markets that people operate in. So you've only got to look at things like best execution and price transparency. I think Andrew Bailey was very clear. He said, you know, LIBOR underpins something like 300 odd trillion of assets, yet it's the opinion of a very, very small number of people. So the goal is to have lending and that type of rate underpinned by the markets that it operates in. I think the challenge is with something like a term rate like LIBOR, it fundamentally brings in cash flow certainty. Borrowers, customers, small businesses need that cash flow certainty. It helps them manage their businesses. It drives the price of the products that they sell. Fundamentally, as you said, you know, the kind of in arrears rates that are being proposed in the market today bring the fundamental difference that you don't have certainty of your cash flows until you're near the end or at the end of the period. So it's very much more than just a rate change. There's talk in the market, are we going to have term rates? Are we going to have alternatives? I think, yes, many markets will have term rate alternatives that will be a pretty good substitute for LIBOR going forward. We can talk about those in a future session in more detail. I think there's lots and lots of challenges involved. A lot of people think it's just a rate change. The new rates, the risk-free rates, which you mentioned earlier that are being proposed in various markets are T plus one rates. They're not published until tomorrow for today. They're a daily rate. They're not a term rate, so you can't freeze for 30, 60, 90 days and just have one rate. They are published at different times in different markets, which in itself will even introduce a challenge. And fundamentally, they compound, which traditionally lending hasn't had compounding baked into its loan agreements and things like that.
So how do you think borrowers are going to react to this? Because as you mentioned, borrowers today have a lot of transparency around cash flow. And even ahead of time with LIBOR, you're able to lock in a rate and project interest for the period to both the borrower and lender. Now we're going to move to a model where we don't provide that level of transparency. And to add to that, you possibly could have a scenario where you have a revolving credit line with multiple different currencies, each operating in a slightly different way, each calculated in a slightly different way maybe, and published at different times. Isn't this going to put borrowers off requesting this type of asset class as a form of financing?
I think it might take more time for that type of rate to move into certain asset classes. Maybe big syndicated deals might take longer. I think from a bilateral perspective, we've already seen some very early adopters, banks issuing SONIA or SOFA-based loans, more to come very, very soon from what we hear in the market. I think it's very much going to depend upon the sophistication on the borrower side. You're going to have a lot of borrowers that just aren't ready, aren't able to deal with this. And some borrowers who will be looking for this, they'll have opportunities out there to get more efficient interest rates, et cetera, lower interest rates maybe. And I think a lot of it's going to depend on the sophistication of the banks and their ability to actually offer it as a scalable solution. I think one of the key challenges I think we have is it's not just about getting your systems ready to prepare for this. It's also largely about the thousands of credit agreements out there that need to be sifted through, searched through to find where LIBOR is even referenced. That there's a huge upfront piece of work before you even start getting to conversion. Some new deals are going to start getting issued soon. The FCA has got a desire. There's no new sterling LIBOR after Q3 2020. So I think the next 3 to 6 months are key for seeing that uptake and what markets it comes in.
Now, going back to the challenges of compounded in arrears, there are two favorite approaches depending on where you are in the world: the compounded to date model and the daily fixed model.
To confuse things, there's actually four that get bandied around now. There's two favored solutions, as you talk, the in arrear and the daily, but there's many more that are being discussed. Very fluid requirements for sure.
And this leads us nicely into the next installment of the podcast, where we'll be discussing the challenges in more detail and how we at Finastra can help you overcome them. Thank you very much for listening.